You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's clothing that bolsters your brand identity and creates a unique connection between your brand, your employees, and your customers. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a supplier of branded apparel to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action. From logo application to online ordering, Lands' End Outfitters offers seamless solutions that give you peace of mind, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
Hello. Ever wondered about the moments that have shaped the lives of well-known people like Sarah McInerney, Maeve Higgins, Vicky Phelan? If so, listen to The Moments That Made Me, the weekend podcast hosted by me, Vicky May, features editor at the Irish Examiner. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Sponsored by Green and Black's Organic Chocolate.
Hello and welcome to the Novel Traveller podcast. My name is Michelle Walsh-Jackson and I'm the Novel Traveller. Well, after that tune, my next guest doesn't really need an introduction. But it is, of course, the wonderful John Sheehan, musician and poet, who joins me this week. We have a very special chat about his travels with Lou Kelly, Ronnie Drew and the Dubliners over their epic career. He also let me into the background to his new album and poetry book. I'll also this week be speaking to Michelle Whelan at the end of the podcast, who has announced the launch of the new Discover Boyne Valley website. She's some great suggestions for things to do in the Boyne Valley region this summer. But for now, sit back and be carried away with this remarkable storyteller and giant of Irish music. It is the great John Sheehan. Well, with me today, I'm delighted to say I have probably the best known musician we have in Ireland at the moment, John Sheehan. Certainly you have had the most remarkable career, John, with the Dubliners and now with yourself, with your own fabulous new album and poetry as well. A lot of people might realise you're a poet. Mm-hmm. So I'm so looking forward to talking to you today about your travels.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. Nice to be chatting.
It's lovely to be chatting. And, you know, when I usually start with people, I ask them, do they have a travel memento or do they have a favourite thing that they collected from their journeys or that they brought back from a place with them? Is there anything particularly from your travels that you have?
I have something very, very special, and there's a nice story attached to it as well. I was in Lisbon Airport about that, might have been 15 years ago or so. And just the usual carry on waiting for the luggage to come in on the conveyor belt. And this man tapped me on the shoulder and he said, "Excuse me, are you John Sheehan of the Dubliners?"
Dubliners.
And then he said, "You changed my life." And I said, "Oh my God, I hope it's for the better." So he went on to explain that he was living a few years before that in Copenhagen and he was playing classical music as a hobby. And he said, "I came to the Dubliners' first concert in the Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen. And when I heard you playing the fiddle, I said to myself, this is the music I want to play, not classical music." So he started going to traditional Irish music sessions and learning jigs and reels on his fiddle. And then he went on to explain that he eventually came to Ireland for a visit, fell in love with the country. And when he retired, he moved over here and bought a little house in Kenmare, just outside Kenmare. And as a hobby, he started making fiddles. So he said, "For to say thank you for changing my life, I would like to make you a fiddle."
So it turned out
that he was going to South America with his wife at that stage, just a connecting flight from Lisbon. And we exchanged emails And about a month later, I got this email with a picture attached of the beginnings of this fiddle being carved out. And about a year later, he sent me various little progressive images of the fiddle taking shape. And about a year later, he phoned me. He said, "I'm now back in Kenmare and I have your fiddle ready if you'd like to come and collect it."
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so I was in Listowel at the time with Mary for the Listowel Writers Week. And we made our way down to Kenmare and we had a great night. And he presented me with this brand new fiddle that he was after making for me.
Oh my God.
Which is something very, very special, you know.
Not a
finished or polished fiddle. A little bit rough in places, but a wonderful tone. And he called it his Guinness fiddle because he put some Guinness powder into the varnish mix, and it brought up some of the grey and kind of black and amber, you know.
Oh my goodness, how remarkable. What a fabulous story, John. And isn't it wonderful the effect music can have on people?
Yeah,
you know, across continents, across countries, you know.
This man's name was Martin Kraut. And sadly, he died in 2017. I got word that he died. So I went down, Mary myself made our way down to Kenmare for the funeral. And it was a typical Irish funeral. He was laid out in the house. And there was loads of local musicians there because he became a kind of, even though he was an outsider, he was German, he became a kind of a catalyst for getting the local traditional musicians together. And so we had a concert around the room where he was laid out. And we went to the funeral and I was asked to say a few words at the funeral. I said a few words of how I met him and the presentation of the fiddle. And then I played a lament on his very own fiddle that he'd made for me, which brought everything.
That must have been very emotional. I can't imagine.
It really was. It brought the whole event full circle, if you like. So that was one of the best stories I think I have.
That is a very, very special memento. My goodness, just from meeting someone on your travels like that, he would have probably never had the courage probably to approach you had he not just bumped into you in Lisbon Airport.
Yeah,
you know,
he said it. Said you changed my life, and he said it in a very, very dramatic kind of way. You changed my life.
I do believe there is no such thing as a coincidence, John. I do believe, and you must feel that, having had so much travels and met so many people over your life, you meet who you're meant to meet, don't you?
And that's right.
It's incredible, the connections we make, you know, throughout travel. And actually, speaking about a Scandinavian man, you've brought to mind a track from your new album, Flirting Fiddles, which I love very much, because it's so pleasurable to have it on in the background while you're there going about cleaning your house and doing your jobs. It's just lovely. It really takes you away. But I particularly like the song Farewell to Harstad. And you have a story about that.
Well, Harstad, yeah. Harstad is a little town up in the very north of Norway. Not quite as north as Norrcap, I think, is the furthest slope, the most northerly town. But this is not too far down the coast from there. A beautiful place. But I was really taken by the beauty of the surroundings as I entered Harstad for the first time. And this tune came into my head. And it had a lament, kind of a sorrowful feeling about it, even though it was a joyous occasion going to this place for the first time. But I realized that I was going to miss the place when I left a couple of days later. So I actually wrote this farewell tune as I was entering the tavern.
That's a very spiritual experience. That was like the creative consciousness nearly reaching you, you know, before you got there. You were really connecting with the place.
That's right. And it was an amazing experience because right in the middle of June, and it was actually the 24th of June, I think we were there. And the midnight sun, of course, kept me awake all night. I had this amazing energy from the light that I just couldn't sleep for a couple of days. But I remember going out onto the coastline, just coming up to midnight, and the sun was setting, but it barely kissed the water when it started rising again. And it was the most amazing experience, you know. There was no proper sunset, as it were. It just barely touched the water, and And wow. And you suddenly realize it's rising again.
It's rising again. Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, how beautiful. So yeah. It was probably too bright to see the Northern Lights then that time of year, was it?
I did experience the Northern Lights a little bit further into the winter, but then down a little bit further south, which is an amazing experience as well. What a display of nature.
Yes, I can imagine. I can just imagine you being inspired to write poetry or a song while you're looking at it, because I've only seen it from an aircraft. I've never actually. I tried desperately when I was in Iceland a few years back, but I hope to get there and see them at some stage. But,
it is a really spiritual experience, I suppose. All right.
But back to your early travels, perhaps even before you were in the Dubliners, what would be your early travel memory?
Well, family holidays, I suppose. My mother and father came from Limerick, a rural area, a place called Arda, where the Arda Chalice was found. My mother came from Arda, a small farming community there. And as kids, as soon as the school holidays had come up in June, we'd all ramble down to Arda and spend a couple of months down there. And of course, it was such a contrast to city living, you know. The first thing we did was threw off our shoes and ran around barefoot. This was such a novelty. And got involved in some of the little chores around the farm, you know, going out, helping in the meadow, saving hay, and back to the bog, cutting turf. And I even learned how to milk a cow when I was down there.
I think we're very lucky, those of us. I mean, my father's from Wexford, and it used to be, they used to say the definition of a Dubliner is a countryman's son or a countryman's daughter. You know? and I think if you have a connection to the countryside and you've been privileged like I have, and you to go back to a farm and learn to milk a cow, I mean, what an experience that is. Kind of young people are deprived of that nowadays, you know.
Yeah, and it was such an air of self-sufficiency where everything was provided. There was very little shopping to be done, except for clothes maybe, but they had the cows and they had the milk from the cows, and they had hens and eggs and grew all their own vegetables, and it was a wonderful experience.
A healthy lifestyle that perhaps some are yearning for now in a way, you know. It's a healthy lifestyle that perhaps some are yearning for now. You know?
We liked it so much, we were really lonely leaving the place every year to come back to Dublin. But it was a wonderful experience. I remember on one year, I think it's around 1945, I was only 6 or 7 anyway at the time, but there was a teacher strike in Dublin. And my mother and father, when you think of it now, they're so casual, they said, "Asher, no point in them coming back after the holidays now that schools are closed, there's a teacher strike on. Sure, let them go to school here for a while." And I stayed for about 6 months, nearly a year, living with me Auntie Peggy and me Uncle Jimmy and Erda.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, that's so. And, you know, you write beautifully about the Irish landscape in your book, Fiddle Dreams, which is your new poetry book. And I picked out a poem about Connemara. And it's so simple and it's so structured. It reminds me of you've put manners nearly on Connemara, you know, as a landscape. Yeah. You've put it into beautiful words. I don't know if you have the book beside you, if you want
to. I have it here. What page is it on?
It's on page 88, yeah.
I'll have a go at reading. I haven't read that one for ages.
But it's very evocative and it really conjures up the, Connemara landscape.
Connemara, stone-clad, rock-strewn, barren landscape facing western sea and sky. Windswept bogland, lake and rock pool, shifting cloud and lambent light. Yellow firs and purple heather, mantle of ever-changing hue. Mountain palettes of green and brown, challenging art to match your mood. Cradling still your ancient culture, haunting sound of Gaelic tongue, hovering on the twilight air, your lonely tunes and Shannos song. Aloof and proud and yet alluring, cold of stone yet warm of heart, native talk with new tones blending, embracing change, yet worlds apart.
Oh, thank you, John. That just really touched me. It's beautiful to hear you read it, because I love Connemara. I really feel the ruggedness and that authentic Irishness that you get. Maybe there's a romanticism from memories of Gaeltacht days, or, you know, spending summers down there. But I do think Connemara is a very special place in Ireland.
Very special and place. And otherworldly almost, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah. It really is. And I mean, you know, we've packaged Ireland up beautifully with the Wild Atlantic Way, and but to step back and to kind of just breathe it in, you know, you can through a poem like that. It was beautiful.
It's a timeless kind of an area, and the light keeps changing. You get four seasons every day.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm thinking of paintings like Paul Henry's paintings, you know, that really capture those beautiful large cumulus nimbus clouds that are just bellowing like smoke out of the cottages. You know, it's just it's such a beautiful part of the country.
And yeah, we go down there nearly every year, down to Clifton for the Clifton Arts Festival at the end of September, and that's one of our regular trips away nowadays in our later years.
Yeah, that's lovely. And, you know, John, when you started travelling with the Dubliners, what places did you go to? And have you any, but I'm sure you've loads of tales, but you know, any particular ones that stand out about the early days when you started?
Dubrovnik, Iceland, Faroe Islands, Australia, New Zealand, Denmark, Norway, Slovenia, all over the place, all the European countries. Faroe Islands, that was an unusual one.
Yeah, that's up north of Scotland, isn't it?
That's right, between Scotland and Iceland, up that way in the North Atlantic. That was one of the places Tim Severn stopped in on his Atlantic trip on the letter boat to St. Brendan voyage. A fairly barren place, not very much. The scenery is breathtaking, of course, but very, very rugged, not very much luxury as such, but an experience again. Denmark, the Tivoli Gardens, Tonder Festival.
And what's it like to play this? I mean, the Tivoli Gardens is, you know, it's a very famous venue, and, you know, it must be just magical to bring your music, you know, or your culture to another country.
Our first trip to Denmark, I think it was 1972, sometime around that. And we'd been just beginning to get popular in Europe, but it was as if the audience knew us already. We used to be beamed out from Radio Caroline back in the late 60s. It's when we had Seven Drunken Nights in the chart. We became quite known all over Northern Europe because of that, you know. And there was a great air of expectation when we went to places like Copenhagen, where the audience had been waiting for a few years for us to come, and at last the messiahs had arrived.
I can imagine the excitement. Yeah, it must have been amazing. And, you know, I find it really, really funny, because although I've only met you in the last few years, 10 or 15 years or so, John, you know, I remember Barney all my life, because he lived down the road from my granny. And Church Street in Howth, and seeing Barney with a banjo, I used to see him more with kind of a lobster pot or a fishing net, you know.
That's right.
So he loved that. Yeah, he loved his bit of fishing. And
used to be given out to me for taking too many gigs in the summer. He wanted to go fishing, you know. He said to me one time, "I want 2 months off in August to go fishing. 2 months off in August." There's a Barneyism for you.
That is brilliant. And I just have to throw back to your poetry, because there is one that stood out for me, and it's Ronnie's Heaven, and it is a great poem. It's quite a long poem, but it's full of the character, and I can imagine the crack you guys had constantly as you travelled around together and making your music. And, you know, the last stanza is really funny. Leaving behind the three great imponderables that tortured you. What is life? What is art? And where the fuck is Barney?
that was always the question. Where the fuck is Barney? Be doing an 8 o'clock concert, and about 5 to 8, Barney go off looking for hamburgers or something to eat. no idea of time at all. And that was always Ronnie's out going, where the fuck is Barney? He's always missing when he should have been there.
Well, do you know, I have actually a funny tale to tell about Ronnie, because you guys were playing, I don't know if you know this, John, but you were playing in Waterford, and my dad is an ex-cop, and he and his brother were travelling down to Wexford, and Ronnie was looking for a lift. Now, I don't know where they found Ronnie or met him, but they said, we'll get you down to Wexford. He said, well, if I get to Wexford, it's close enough to Waterford. And I believe the drive took them something like 8 hours, because there was a little bit of stopping off on the way. And my dad and his brother had such fun. They ended up going to Waterford as well. Bringing Ronnie to the stage. My dad had a fantastic night with you guys. And I'm sure there are so many people listening to this who have relatives or friends, or maybe themselves ended up having great nights.
There was one time that reminds me of a story where Leaven O'Donoghue's back in the very early days, before I actually joined, but I heard the story afterwards. And Kieran McMahona, he was taking three or four of the lads in his car, a Volkswagen Beetle, down to a flak hole in Newcastle West. So they all teamed out of O'Donoghue's into Kieran McMahon's Volkswagen anyway. And as he was taking off, he said, no stopping now, lads, till we get past Parkgate Street.
Parkgate Street.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just priceless. It really is. But, it was a different time, different characters, a different world. But I'm very fortunate to have heard you play back in 1986 when you played out here at the festival. And of course, I've heard your fabulous concerts down in the Abbey Tavern since, especially your one for your 80th birthday where you played there.
Oh, you were at that one,
And that was my birthday, John. So thanks very much for giving me a lovely night out for my birthday.
Brilliant.
That was a great night. That was great. So have you
that night we had Richie Buckley with us?
You had Michael with you another one. But have you had any disastrous travel experiences? Where things have gone wrong?
We were in a serious enough crash one time in Norway. We had an accident with a tractor. He indicated he was turning left, but he actually turned right, and we had a serious collision with this tractor. The tractor driver wasn't injured, but we went off the road, capsized, and slid down this ravine heading for a fjord, and luckily got stopped by a tree and on the roof of the car, and we all eventually scrambled out. I had a bit of a cut in the head, and No serious injuries, but we didn't make the gig that night. But we did for the next night. We had to go to a clinic and get a few stitches.
Oh, my God, that must have been terrifying.
It was
serious
enough. Could have been a lot worse, of course. We could have ended up in the bloody fjord and got drowned, And so
Gosh, the tree was just in the right place to stop you.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Gosh.
A few hairy ones like that. A few hairy ones on flights as well, with tires bursting on landing and that kind of thing.
Would you have travelled in smaller aircraft or?
Oh, indeed, we did. Yeah, actually, when we went up to the Faroe Islands that time, we hired out a small aircraft from Dublin Airport. Iona Airways was this small private company.
I remember Iona well.
So it was either a matter of flying from Dublin to Copenhagen and then another flight up to Glasgow and then up on to the Faroe Islands. But we decided the handiest way was to get Iona on the job. It's a little 6 or 8 seater plane, but it was a bit of an adventure. But
But generally, did you ever kind of have a bus that brought you around or anything like that? Or would you?
Well, in Germany now, in Holland, we had a proper touring bus with sleepers and everything, and 5 or 6 beds if you fancied having a bit of a sleep. If you were up late night before, which was most nights.
Did you get to see much while you were travelling, or would you have been really just working?
You saw a lot of airports and vineyards and concert halls and city churches and spires and those kind of fleeting images, no matter where you go. But I remember we're passing this huge vineyard one day, and Barney says to Lou, Hey, Luke, have a look up there. There's a lot of hangovers hanging, growing up there.
Hangovers growing off the vines. Yeah. And what about with yourself and Mary now for holidays? Where would you like to go? Where would be top of your bucket list?
We used to go to London regularly enough and spend a few days going to theatres and shows and that kind of thing, good restaurants. And but there was one year, I think it was our 13th wedding anniversary. I told her we had arranged this trip to London for a few days. Now, the kids were behind the planning of it. We were actually going to Bermuda, but she didn't know that.
Oh, fantastic.
So the kids, she packed her case for winter clothes going to London. But the kids, meanwhile, because they were part of the whole secret going on in the background, they got the case and repacked summer stuff into it for Bermuda. So she began to be suspect there was something going on. We arrived in London and said, where are we going now? You're bringing me to another terminal. And I said, a little surprise, we have another little trip. So she deliberately didn't look at any signs or indicate where we might be going. She seemed to get into the spirit of the secret of the whole thing. So she didn't know where we were going until the pilot announced, as we were taking off, said, welcome aboard on this flight to Bermuda. And oh my God,
that is so lovely. Oh, you're very romantic, John, aren't you? How lovely.
We had a lovely, another world over there. It's like going back a century, you know, there was no cars or traffic, no pollution. I think we ended up hiring out little mopeds or scooters to get around the island, you know, but you'd get around the island in a day if you wanted to, you know.
And isn't there special caves there, crystal caves or something?
That's right. Yeah, we went to visit those two and we stayed in a very nice hotel and people were so courteous and polite and old worldly in a way, and it was a total relaxation holiday for us, you know.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
It was about 10 days, but that was our flight to Bermuda, or our trip to Bermuda, rather.
Wow. I must ask Siobhan about that, you know, because, you know, I'm such a good pal with your daughter and she's such a wonderful soul. I mean, I was telling you how much I miss her. She has this wonderful Sunbeam clinic where she does Reiki and holistic treatments. And, you know, we're really missing people like that at the moment. Because so good behind, for the spirit.
She was behind the case packing for that.
I'd say she was just as excited packing the case as Mary was when she got there. I could just imagine. Right, yeah. Oh, how lovely.
Another place we went in over the last few years was Venice. We'd never actually been to Venice, or I'd never played there, but we went there for a week, which the kids organized for us as well. And St. Mark's Square, we had a beautiful luxury hotel at the end of St. Mark's Square. I can't remember the name of it now. But again, a very relaxing place to go, and no cars or motorbikes or anything. People walked everywhere.
And I think you must stay the night in Venice to actually experience Venice, because it's so packed with tourists during the day. You do miss that. The real feel for the city, I think, is at nighttime or as the sun sets. Would you think
that's right? It's a magical atmosphere that descends after dusk. Yeah.
And it's like walking through paintings, I often feel, with the colours and the moods, you know, and the reflections in the water. You know,
St. Mark's Square is such a magical place with all these different restaurants and little outdoor orchestras outside each one, and they all take it in turn to do little mini concerts. You know, I remember when I was there, I just picked up on a couple of notes from one of the tunes that they were playing, and I just felt that's a building block for a new melody now. That these three or four notes. And each day, I just kept the notes in my head. Each day I went out, I composed another little bar. And by the end of the week, I had a complete new tune composed just in my head. I never wrote down a note. But when I came home, I got the fiddle out and played this tune for the first time.
Oh, I how called lovely.
It St. Mark's Square, a dreamy, jazzy kind of a little tune. Yeah.
Oh gosh, I'll be looking that up now. I'll be looking to listen to that now.
I haven't recorded it yet.
Oh no! Oh, it's new. Oh really? Oh wow! We're getting hot off the press, which is great. And you must know Paris because one of the songs on your new album is "Autumn in Paris," and it's probably my favorite song on the album. Is there a story behind it?
It's a funny kind of a story. I don't know if it's in the sleeve notes or not, but I actually composed that tune on the way into a Norwegian city, Oslo. I think it might be in Oslo. And what I was trying to do, it's strange where tunes come from. I have a feeling the tunes are already there and the composer discovers them.
Oh, so that's a great way to put it. I completely understand where you're coming from because I find that in the writing process, I do feel the story is already there and I'm like just a channel taking down the story.
And anyway, what I was trying to do in my head, sitting in the back of a wagon, was to compose a melody or a counter melody or a harmony for an existing song. And after a few bars, I suddenly realized the harmony was claiming its own right to be a melody. And that turned out to be Autumn in Paris. And I felt it had a Parisian feel to it. And the autumn bit was associated with a certain sadness at the time. And that's where the title came from, Autumn in Paris, which was actually written on the way into Oslo, sitting in the back of the wagon. At least the start of it.
That's funny because it does conjure up Paris to me. It definitely probably came from there originally and floated, you know, through the creative consciousness in some way.
But what we were saying there about tunes already existing, I wrote a haiku. You know the haiku poem?
Yeah. Yeah.
The Japanese poem, 17 syllables. Yeah. I tried to express that idea in a haiku one time. And it goes, I thought of these notes floating around the air like orphans. And a composer's job is to put them into a family, which we call a melody.
Oh, how lovely. that's a poem as well.
So the haiku I wrote was, orphaned notes adrift, winds of inspiration blow, and you tune finds me.
It's so simple, but it explains perfectly your process, doesn't it?
It gets to me the image across.
So, what about, you've been on your travels, you know, you must have come across some strange foods or different types of foods. Is there any particular ones that stand out?
Certain foods associated with certain places, and when we go back to the same place again, we would tend to go for the same restaurant or the same experience of food. We played quite a bit in Ljubljana in Slovenia, and they had a wonderful dish I discovered there. It was, what was it called? Lignan ajaro, I think it was something like that. It's actually squid fried in butter and garlic. The squid is so, you tend to think of squid as being a bit tough, but this was so tender and luscious. It was just something we went for every time, lignan ajaro. Then in Hamburg, I'd go for eel soup.
Eel soup, what's that like?
Oh, beautiful. Very, very, a little bit salty, very fishy, smoky, smoked eel soup, actually. And we used to go to a restaurant there in Hamburg Harbour when we had a free night, great selection of fish, every fish you can imagine available there, you know.
Yeah.
And different places, Vienna and Austria, I think of garlic soup. Knoblauch soup and laced with garlic, you know, chopped up garlic. I used to love that. And they also had a dish that didn't sound very inviting, but it was actually beautiful, boiled beef with a special horseradish sauce. Now, boiled beef doesn't sound too nice, but it was actually, whatever way they did it, and with this horseradish sauce on it.
Probably if they cooked it for a long, long time, I could imagine, you know.
It was gorgeous. It was a very, various quirky little things like that in different places, you know. Vienna was another place we played played in fairly often. We used to do a week's residency in Vienna every year in the what's the name of the hall, Little Theater. We ended up one time. We became so well known with the government and the officials in the city that they awarded us a Freedom of the City honor.
How lovely!
One of our trips there, yeah, the special presented us with the special trophies and declared us free men of Vienna City.
And are you allowed to bring your sheep then into it or something? Or is this special? Some special?
Yeah, wasn't that one of the things about the freedom
from Dublin? Yeah, you can graze your sheep in Stephen's Green. Do you have some special, concessions now in Vienna?
So, all these wonderful different places, you know.
And you must have funny tales. Is there any really cracking funny tale from your travels? Either with the lads or with your family or
there was a concert. Just a funny story that involved Luke and a great jazz player. We were playing in Australia in this concert, and who came into our concert only Stefan Grappelli, the great jazz violinist. I must say I was a bit nervous playing my fiddle solo that night, knowing that he was in the audience. But we met him the next day, Luke and myself. And what he was intrigued about was my tin whistle playing. He was intrigued with the tin whistle. He said, such a simple instrument and the music you can make, it's wonderful. So anyway, we had a nice chat. And that night we were doing a concert and Luke recounted a meeting with Stefan Grappelli. But of course, he distorted the whole thing completely. He says, this morning, ladies and gentlemen, we met Stefan Grappelli, and I asked him, what did you think of our fiddle player? And Stefan said, oh, he plays the tin whistle so well.
Oh, dear.
he didn't play the tin whistle well, but not in that context.
Oh, God. I'd say the slagging was nonstop between
It was great. There was great crack. There was another night we were in a pub in Tipperary, and I was still working in the ESB at the time, so I was always anxious to get home early because I had to be into work the next morning. Of course, there was no bother on the lads. They didn't care what time we finished. So we're in the pub. We're having one for the road, and one for the road became two and three and four for the road. Anyway, I gave I cut the barman's eye at the end of the bar and said, listen, for God's sake, close the bar after the next round. I have to get back to Dublin. So I gave him a fiver as a tip. It's a generous enough tip at the time. I'm talking about 40 years ago.
Sure.
So anyway, the bar didn't close at the next round or the next round. So we're driving home and Ronnie was sitting beside me. And I said, Ronnie, he was some chancellor of a barman. I gave him a fiver to close the bar about 2 hours ago. He says, Ronnie, I knew what you were up to. I gave him a tenner to keep it open.
Oh, dear. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's right. I can just picture Ronnie saying that too.
It was great camaraderie between us all. We were like brothers in a family in a way, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a bit of crack on them.
And where would be your favorite place then in Ireland to go for some rest, maybe even just yourself and Mary or with the family?
I tend to go for luxury.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with luxury. I agree.
Dromoland Castle, Ashford Castle, the sister castle up in Mayo, and Ballinahinch Castle downtown in Connemara. We're there not so long ago, but 2 years there, a special award I got with Matt Malloy of the Chieftains. Just beside the John Wayne statue there, they have a little circular wall and they have various people's handprints in the wall and done in bronze, I think. But Matt Malloy of the Chieftains and myself, a couple of years ago, we were invited down and
a hall of fame.
And of course we stayed in Ashford Castle and had a wonderful, wonderful night there.
Gorgeous.
But a bit of luxury when you're away. I think when you're away, either on holiday or on tour, you shouldn't be expected to stay in a place that has less luxury than your own home.
Than your own home, I agree. Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely. You're working. You're working. You know.
But Drummond, we have a good connection with Drummond. We had two of our daughters' weddings down there over the years, Siobhan and Keola. And they treated us like royalty. What a wonderful place to go for a few days.
It's absolutely, it is gorgeous. Tell me what else. Have you got any travel plans then for when we're able to travel again? Is there, where's the first place that you're going to go?
At the moment, not really. I'm kind of philosophical. I just take things as they come day by day, you know. I've been doing a couple of things online. There was a guy here with a recording machine and a video camera the other day. Social distancing, of course.
Of course, yes.
At Declan O'Rourke's invitation, Declan has a new album coming out, and he asked. I played fiddle on the official recording, but he's doing this virtual concert from the Abbey Theatre, and he asked me to join him on this tune. So there's been I've been busy enough doing things like that over the last year, yeah. Writing poetry. I got an invitation to write a poem for a Trad Fest meeting there a couple of months ago, which I did. And what else did I do? Poetry Ireland brought out this idea of involving older people to contribute a line of poetry to a longer poem, which I called a poemathon.
Oh, and
the idea was to express your feelings about lockdown and COVID and so on. So I was invited to write an opening line, and then it did the rounds of various institutions and old people's homes and various writers' groups and so on. And then after, I think they got in about 550 lines, and then it came back to me to write a closing line. So I had the honour of opening
lovely.
It and closing it.
I love that.
I think there's an element of that in it with writing. If you've got a deadline to meet, it's going to automatically
it puts manners on the creative juices. Your group, the Dubliners, is so well known, and it sums up the place where you're from, and you know, a quarter of the population's from Dublin. Mm. But you've also, two of your pieces particularly, I think, sum up Dublin. And you've written, you know, ballads, which I think probably are best known traditional pieces, with Merino Waltz.
Oh, the Merino Waltz,
it's such a beautiful piece. Now, is Siobhan telling me the truth here, that you were wallpapering your auntie's house and you got distracted and you wrote that instead?
And Siobhan was involved. Siobhan's a good harp player, you know. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I do know, and I also know that Siobhan played on Fairy Tale of New York, and she plays
she played the harp
with the Pogues. Yeah, I do indeed.
Yeah, but I actually wrote that in my mother's house, and Marino and Siobhan was with me. She was there, and I was doing a bit of wallpapering and painting. My mother was away on holiday, so I decided I'd take the opportunity to decorate the place a bit. And Siobhan came in for a cup of tea one night. She was coming from a harp lesson, had the harp with her. And after the cup of tea, I was just doodling on the harp, and I played these couple of notes that I was trying to play a descending arpeggio. Do, so, mi, do. But not being able to play the harp, I misplayed the fourth note and go, do, so, mi, ti. And I thought, oh, Jesus, that could be the start of a tune. And that's where the Merino Waltz came from. I had it written about half an hour later.
That's fantastic.
On Siobhan's harp. So Siobhan was part of the whole thing.
Of the process. Oh, how lovely. And
yeah,
there's
a good example of a tune looking for a composer. You know, I wasn't trying to compose a tune. I was only just doodling on the tune. Presented itself, you know, or the potential for it, rather.
And it's perfect. It's just perfect piece of music from start to finish. It's wonderful that it was used in that Born Nimona ad, so that it just reached an even wider audience, and now people from all over the world love it.
That was a unique ad, really, and one of the things I liked about the ad, there was no voiceover. It was just all the imagery of the guy in the rocking chair and the blazing fire and the comfort and the luxury of a home fire.
Yeah, and that piece of music really does make that, just brings it all together, just that the comfort of home and a real fire, you know.
Yeah, Yeah, I remember being out in RTE a couple of months after the ad came out, and the receptionist said to me, "Are you the fellow that wrote that Marina Walls?" I said, "Yes." So we've been we had about 100 phone calls in the last couple of weeks, people trying to find out where to get the music.
Oh, wow. And yeah, well, it was instant hit.
Yeah, and then I had a chat with the people in Walton's Music, and they said, we're not sure about a single tune, if it was part of a book. I said, no, I think you're wrong there. There's a lot of people looking for it. So they brought it out, and they couldn't believe that about 20,000 copies sold in a couple of months.
Well, it
has one of those, ones, something in it that's impossible to analyze, fortunately. But sometimes tunes have that particular quality you can't quite tell or recreate the thing again, you know.
It's terrific to have written something, you know, that has touched so many people that way, you know. Congratulations, it's a wonderful achievement.
It's a lovely, feeling. It's a nice feeling of connectedness, but it means something different to different people, I think, as well, you know.
Yes, yes.
People conjure up their own image. A couple of songwriters asked me if they'd maybe write words to it, and I said no. I think the tune conjures up different images for different people. Just leave it like that. It's more of a magical thing about that, you know.
I agree wholeheartedly with you on that, John. Yeah, I think it does mean different things to different people.
As
it stands alone, it's perfect. Yeah.
Gordon and Mona. Yeah, Barney used to call it the bog walls. The bog walls, used to say.
You're such a droll character, Barney. You know, you'd miss him on church.
Miss him. I think of Barney every day. He was an amazing character.
And so plans then, apart from this piece you're doing with Declan, is there anything else coming up?
No, well, I'm kind of semi-retired. I'll be 82 now in May, so...
And you don't look it or sound it or act it, John. We know that.
So I'm not looking for any long-term contracts, but I'm looking forward to playing again with Michael Howard. We do concerts together. Maybe a couple of dozen a year, but no long trips. But that'd be the main thing I'd be looking forward to. And just getting out and mixing with people again. Yeah, generally,
we're all missing that.
Yeah, when you were asking me about, I suppose a lot of people go to the well-known sightseeing places when they go to a city. But I ended up in Braunschweig one day in Germany, and I met this fiddle maker, and he invited me out to his workshop. And he had all these pieces of spruce and maple, hundreds of years old, were going to become the backs and bellies of fiddles. And it was quite amazing. He'd hold up one of these and he'd just tap it with his fingers, and he'd listening out for the response of the wood, a particular sound or note.
Amazing.
You judge the piece of wood, its suitability for a particular instrument and that particular way, where he was listening to the wood speaking to him, as it were, you know.
Oh, yeah, fabulous.
And it was in Braunschweig, as I say, a husband and wife team, both fiddle makers and bow makers. But I wrote a poem about that experience. If it's not too long, maybe
I'd love to hear it. And that'd be a privilege. Thanks, John.
Ah, there's no privilege, dude. These are for everybody. The Fiddlemaker's Workshop. These workshop walls keep watch on banks of time, secure in planks of ancient spruce and maple, saved and seasoned for bellies and backs of future fiddles. In this peaceful place where timber talks and a master listens, the wonder of a fiddle unfolds. From the delicate spiral of the scroll to the tailpiece that bears all tension without complaint. On workbench wall and windowsill, traditional tools abound to cut, carve, shape, drill, clamp and glue a family of wood to live in harmony. When all is set and settled, Pernambuco bow and a swish of horsehair whisper down through bridge and soundpost, waking memories of birdsong in trees of an ancient forest.
Oh, God, that is beautiful.
But you know the amazing thing about that poem? It took me about 3 weeks to to learn or to finish that poem. When I had it finished, I thought about all the waste pieces of wood that are going to be swept out the workshop door. And if they hadn't been removed, the fiddle would never have been born, as it were. So I thought, I felt sorry for these bits of waste wood and sawdust and all. And I said, surely they must deserve a poem of their own.
Yeah.
And I wrote this second poem. It's very short, in about 3 minutes. And I think it's probably more poetic than the first one. I call it Sweepings of the Workshop. Discarded debris of music, offcuts, shavings, sawdust, gougings that gave contour to back and belly, F-hole cutouts that liberate the voice of a fiddle, unsung heroes, martyrs who fell that angels might fly.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
Isn't that nice?
But you know what I took from the first poem? I took the birds that were in the trees. I took them as kind of like lending their energy to the wood that made the violins.
That's right. Actually, that was another image that the very same image came to mind a few times, of the first music that the wood and the branches of the trees experience with the birds singing.
Well, that just came to me, and I'd never thought about that before. So that resonated with me. It's beautiful, John.
Oh, as if they were imbuing the grain with the gift of music. For my 8th birthday, I got a Dublin-made fiddle, a Perry, and it's about 240 years old. And it's amazing playing these instruments and thinking of the journey it must have had from over the last couple of hundred years in the history.
The tunes that it must have been played, you know.
Yes.
It's remarkable. And, you know, I feel like nearly I can travel now just by listening to your music and reading the poetry.
Thinking of the most southerly place, the nearest town to the North Pole and the South Island of New Zealand, a place called Invercargill. That's what they boast about the place. It's the closest town to the South Pole. But that was the most southerly place we ever played on one of our New Zealand trips years and years ago.
And it's a great way to see the world by traveling and taking
that is,
your music
and meeting people and music is that wonderful universal. It's like a universal language. It doesn't matter what country you go to.
Absolutely.
You know, even if they don't understand all the words, they tune into the spirit of what you're playing and singing. You know.
Yes. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I have a short poem. It's the very last poem in my book.
Oh, lovely.
And I think it's a nice sentiment in it, because I think we all have a certain hankering to leave the world a slightly better place than the world we entered. And we all do it in different ways. I call this one Signatures, and I think of an architect, his signature is a beautiful building. That's his actual signature he leaves in the world. A carver or a potter leaves it in a piece of carving on wood or stone or metal, and so on. But the musician does it slightly differently. And this is its signature. The ploughman leaves his trace on field and furrow. The sculptor's mark is etched in chiseled stone. With sheaves of gold, the thatcher's name is written. In rings of clay, the potter's name is known. When day is done and evening firelight beckons, when tradesmen all are free from toil and care, I linger in the shadows with my fiddle and softly leave my signature in air.
Well,
I thought you might like that one.
I do like that one, John. And, you know, I'm really curious about air and what air is and what is in the air, you know, around us.
Yes,
and I do. We've mentioned the creative consciousness a couple of times in our conversation.
Mm.
And I do think it is out there. And whether you're grabbing, you know, a melody, or you're picking words for a book, or you're just trying to visualize something to put into a painting, you know, there is something. We're so busy and caught up to, you know, looking at tangible things, 3D things in the world and the world as it is, but we mustn't forget about the air.
We can't see the air. And isn't it the medium between the musician and the listener as well? the molecules of air in between that are vibrating at different frequencies and
absolutely
transmitting the music. Actually, I wrote an essay about that. I must send it to you sometime for the crack. It was about a molecule of air writing a letter to the Irish Times complaining about the way molecules of air have to suffer in the name of art and music.
Oh, gosh, I'd love to hear that. And, oh, that is...
So when you think of these molecules, they're being subjected to widely different ranges of frequency. Dances, say, in the case of a flute player, they're going down the narrow bore, this narrow, dark passage of a wooden flute, and the flicker of light coming in from the fingers overhead, and then being subjected to various degrees of moisture in the air and dripping to the floor and drops, and then being stamped to death by the timekeeping feet of the musicians.
I would love to see that.
Oh, just a mad idea I got one day. the poor molecules of air where they're tortured in the name of art.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, John, I that has been such a lovely journey today. Now, my head is full of lovely places, from New Zealand to Norway and that. But, you know, it feels so much more accessible when you can reach them with music and poetry.
Ah, yeah, it's a wonderful gift. Yeah. Communication is what it's all about, really, isn't it?
It is, John.
In different forms.
Yeah.
We don't need words to communicate when you have music as a gift.
Well, John, listen, thank you so much for joining me today. I could talk to you for another hour, and we've so much to talk about. I really appreciate your time and
for
your lovely trips and journeys with the Dubliners and yourself and your family. And advise them all to get Flirting Fiddles. It's lovely to listen to. Lovely easy listen.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
And Fiddle Dreams, your beautiful poetry book. Very enjoying both of those all the way through.
Ah, thank you. Yeah. I leave you with a funny haiku that I wrote recently. Insomniac sheep tossing and turning all night. They're counting people.
John, that is perfect. That is perfect. Listen, on that fabulous note, thank you so much. Thank you so much, and take care. And I wish you many more years of creativity and making people happy with your music and your poems.
Thank you, Michelle. The same to you and all your writing and your travels. And
thank you so much,
exploration.
John.
You're great.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Well, what a truly inspiring artist John Sheehan is, and an absolute gentleman. I could have talked to him all day. I simply love his music, and that tune you're hearing in the background is my personal favourite from his gorgeous album Flirting Fiddles. It's called Autumn in Paris. But there are so many tunes to choose from, and you'll get to hear the other ones that we spoke about in the podcast. So this week, I also caught up with Michelle Whelan from Mead County Council, who told me about the new website discoverboynevalley.ie. She also speaks of what there is to do in the region this summer. So if you're looking for some inspiration, now that we've got positive news about travelling opening up this summer, do stick around and listen to the rest of the podcast. With me today, I have Michelle Whelan from Discover Boyne Valley. Thanks for joining me, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. Yeah, delighted to be on your podcast. It's great.
Great. And, you know, just for the listeners, I mean, we all kind of presume everybody knows where the Boyne Valley is. Can you tell us exactly the area that you cover?
Yeah, so it's just north of Dublin. It's Meath and South Louth. So it's along the River Boyne. You probably know some of the towns, Slane, Navan, Trim, Drogheda, Kells, and around kind of Dunboyne, Enfield. So that's the area, very historical area, really interesting place. I'm sure you know parts of it very well.
I do, of course. Being an ex-art teacher, I loved bringing students up to Newgrange, which is one of the most fantastic historic sites in the world. And we are so lucky to have it in Ireland.
Oh, we're so lucky. One of three UNESCO World Heritage Sites. And as my kids keep saying, it's older than the pyramids of Egypt. Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. we're really proud to have it. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah. And what else? I mean, Newgrange is obviously, you know, up there, one of the top highlights. What are other highlighted sites that you would recommend people get to see?
Yeah, so I suppose very close to Newgrange, then you have the Battle of the Boyne site, which is you've history from the 5,000 years then right up to like 1690 with the Battle of the Boyne site. And you have Old Bridge House, and there's lovely walks around, a lovely coffee shop. And say if one of our newest walks is the Boyne Valley Camino. So you could actually start in Drogheda. I did it with a friend maybe 2 years ago, and it's 25 kilometres. So you could do your first 25 kilometres of your Camino in the Boyne Valley and get your stamp, you know, and do your remaining 75 kilometres.
Sorry for interrupting. Do you mean the actual official, like Santiago de Compostela Camino?
Yeah,
has a link here. Wow, Michelle.
Yeah, so you have to do 100 kilometres to do your proper Camino. You could do 25 kilometres in the Boyne Valley and then do the remaining 75 there. So, yeah, really good. So you start in Drogheda, come out to the Battle of the Boyne, then walk as far as Old Mellifont Abbey. There's a whole route marked out for it, and there's a map on our website on discoverboynevalley.ie. So really good. Yeah, that's one of the highlights, definitely. I really enjoyed it when I did it.
Oh, great. And is there anything like especially for families that you'd call a highlight?
Yeah, well, I suppose everyone knows Tato Park, Ireland's only theme park. So, yeah, great fun, especially for the teenagers and younger, because they have the zoo as well. So the roller coaster is such fun. I'm terrified of heights, but I did it when they first opened. They put me right at the very front, so lots of thrills there. And now they have their Lemur enclosure, so you can walk along with all the little animals, and then you have the birds of prey, which I love. Yeah, so really good fun, like in Tato Park. But there's loads of other things for families to do. Like if you have young children, then there's BY's Nature Trail, and it's just near Trim Castle, and they have a lovely walking trail. You learn all about the bees and the pollinators. And just close by, as I said, Trim Castle, 12th century castle, and you get a tour right up to the top. Fantastic views over Trim. And Trim is a beautiful town, Michelle. You've probably been there as well.
Sure, it is. It is. And yeah. Of course, anyone who's a fan of that incredible movie, epic movie Braveheart, will know that a lot of it was filmed there.
Yeah, Mel Gibson, big fan of Trim Castle. It's lovely. Like, there's just lovely cafes, lovely walks around the town, and then Boyne Valley Activities is in the town, so you could hire kayaks and go along the River Boyne, and he also does a historical tour, so you can learn about the history of the town and the castle from the river, which is really nice.
That's a lovely idea. I've often, whenever kayaking is available, I always say yes please. I took some little trips in the Hidden Heartlands 2 years ago.
Oh, lovely. Fabulous. Yeah,
but I've done it in cities as well, like in Spain and in Thailand, of course, in different countries around the world. Kayaking is one of the most relaxing things you can do, and it's a wonderful family activity, isn't
great
it?
Great family. Yes,
being on the water.
We have another one over beside the Battle of Boyne that I mentioned. It's Boyne Boats, and he does a trip on a naval curragh, which is really nice for families too. And he talks about the myths and legends. It's really good. And he hires his boats to the Game of Thrones. So he tells you all the stories from the Game of Thrones. So that's really
fabulous.
Good fun too. Yeah.
And of course, people might overlook the fact that you also have a beach. In Boyne Valley. Yes. You have
right.
How many miles of strand have you?
Oh my God, I actually don't know, but so it stretches right up into Louth. So it's you have Laytown, Bettystown, Mornington, right up into Claverhead, and close to the Glide Inn as well. It's a lovely restaurant up there, so you can have lovely food and sit out and look at the sea. So really nice, yeah.
No, we are spoiled. It is a gorgeous region. And is there anything new that is that has been stalled over the last year, or anything that had just opened before the first lockdown that
just last about? Week or just recently we launched the Royal Canal Greenway. So
I saw that on the news. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so it's 130 kilometers and it passes through County Meath, through Enfield, Longwood, and the Hill of Down. So that's a really nice one for families, couples, anybody really. Just hire a bike or bring your own bikes and take a lovely cycle. And it's a lovely gentle cycle, you know, so you can cover a lot of ground very quickly.
Yeah, and people are really getting out and enjoying the great outdoors. And it's lovely that, you know, you've got great accessibility then with bikes and walks. That's excellent. And you do have a new website, don't you, that I found?
Yeah, we do, discoverboyneValley.ie. And yeah, if you go onto that and you'll find lots of really good itineraries. We've itineraries on the outdoors, as you said, like everyone wants to get out and do a bit of walking. We've itineraries on family fun, on wellness, on food. Oh. We've great food in the Boyne Valley.
Oh, yes. So. Oh, tell me about the food producers and give me an example of some stuff to do on the food itinerary.
Yeah, we've lots of really good stuff. So say, for example, around Slane, we've the Slane Food Circle. So you could start at Rock Farm Slane. They have an organic farm and they will be doing their farmer's market when things open up every Thursday. And then you also have Newgrange Oil, which is very close. And you could do a tour of Boyne Valley Farmhouse Cheese. And also of Cockagee Cider. So you could fit all that into one day, which is great.
Cider. I love the idea of organic, you know, homegrown cider like that. That sounds great.
Yeah, lovely. We've actually a lot of drinks around the area, craft drinks. So Listoke Gin School is the first gin school in Ireland, which is really good fun. If you've a group of friends, definitely recommend it.
And I even know in my own yacht club here in Howth, they make their own gin, but they make it in Listoke, I believe. They go up there and they have their ingredients they use. So
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
you pick your own botanicals and make it and bring home your own bottle. It's really good. And then Slane Distillery is really interesting. Like they've a really beautiful tour. They've just restored all the buildings and it's right next door to Slane Castle and part of Rock Farm as well. So, and actually you can hire electric bikes and cycle all around the estate. So lots of fun stuff to do.
That takes the pain out of travelling when you have an electric bike. And what about with food. What about with children, you know, for itineraries? There is a lot going on, isn't there, for families?
There's a lot. You've got Causey Farm. They're doing their ice cream adventure this summer. So it's all based on a dairy farm and you can go along, see all the little animals, eat ice cream. What's not to love about ice cream? So blow bubbles and play games and puzzles. And yeah, it's all out in the fresh air, out in the outdoors. So yeah, that'll be really good fun.
Oh, that's great for the little ones.
Yeah, really good for little ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you also have glamping, don't you? I know that Rock Farm,
Rock Farm does glamping and Lochroom Megalithic Centre over near the Old Castle, they both do glamping. So, yeah, that's a really good, fun thing to do. Something a bit different. And then while you're over at Lochroom, you can have a look at the Lochroom Cairns as well. And there's Lochroom Gardens, which is close by, and they do a fairy trail. So that's really good for the little ones as well. Like just, and even multi-generational, you want to bring the grandparents and, you know, just they give you the clues and you have to solve the puzzle and go around and find the fairies and all that.
Right. Well, that's a lovely idea. That's absolutely, oh my goodness. It sounds like there's an awful lot to do, but if you've made it easy for people when they can just go on your website then and see the itineraries. So I think that's really good planning.
Just have a look at that and it makes it a lot easier to kind of plan out your holiday and you can stay in one of the nice towns locally like Slane, Trim, Kells, Drogheda and Avon I was mentioning. So, you know, there's loads to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, Ireland's Ancient East, I think, is a great idea. It kind of makes it clear for everybody that this is an area steeped in heritage and history along the east coast of Ireland, running all the way down to Waterford, you know, and all the way up to Monaghan. So I think it's great that, you know, you've really pinpointed your area perfectly. And I'm not going to stop without saying you also have got fabulous Monaster Boyce, which is a wonderful area with a round tower and high crosses as well, don't
That's
you?
That's right. Monaster Boyce is lovely. And there's guides there during the summer, so you can get a guided tour of the high crosses. There's the finest high crosses in Ireland there. So yeah, like you said, Michelle, really good on history and heritage. Like Bruna Bonia now has their new visitor exhibition. So I'm just dying to go back up and see it. It just closed, or it just opened, it launched just before the lockdown. So it's really amazing, with really, really modern, you know. So, and then you can go over and see Newgrange after seeing the exhibition. So yeah.
There's going to be lots to see and do this summer when we can go travel through around different counties. Michelle, you're giving me food for thought. I really want to escape up there now. Absolutely. And, you know, you do give away a terrific prize on the Elaine Show. So I'll get any listeners to just look up the Instagram page for the Elaine Show. This week we were chatting about it, and check tomorrow's Irish Daily Mail, because there'll be more about and about the Discover Boyne Valley website and what people can do. Thanks so much for your time, Michelle. It's great chatting with you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I've been teaching art for decades, and the magnificence of our megalithic monuments at Newgrange never ceased to amaze me. But as Michelle explained, there's much to see and do in the Boyne Valley region, especially for families. I'll definitely be taking a trip up there as soon as hospitality opens. But in the meantime, I'll be checking out their new website, discoverboynevalley.ie. So I'm playing out now with another gorgeous song from John Sheehan's album Flirting Fiddles. This is Farewell to Harstad, and it certainly whisks me away to the beauty of Norway. If you're looking for travel inspiration, you can check out my website, thenoveltraveller.com. And you can read my ramblings in my weekly column in the Irish Daily Mail. You'll find it on the travel pages. So I've a very special surprise for next week, being the last episode in the current series. And novel is the operative word, so be sure to tune in. But until then, ciao for now, and enjoy the rest of John Sheehan's Farewell to Harstad.
cannot believe I've no work again. It's so hard to build a career.
Well, have you thought about a career in technology?
Nah, I've no tech qualifications.
What about Future in Tech? Their academy offers industry qualifications in cybersecurity, cloud, digital marketing, data analytics, web and software development. And it's all free.
But lots of places offer free programs. How's this different?
It's 100% online classroom learning with live tutors. You don't need a tech background. And you have access to industry mentors and career advisors.
Great. Where do I apply?
At futureintech.ie.
This program is fully funded by the Technology Ireland ICT SkillNet through SkillNet Ireland.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's clothing that bolsters your brand identity and creates a unique connection between your brand, your employees, and your customers. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a supplier of branded apparel to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action. From logo application to online ordering, Lands' End Outfitters offers seamless solutions that give you peace of mind, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.